Well, the Federal Reserve just admitted they don't know what to do. They're throwing up their hands. They're basically saying, we're done. We can't stop inflation. This is the state of affairs right now in the United States. And we are going to have to sit back and watch this inflation run hot for the coming years. Get ready for it, folks. This is what the Federal Reserve is doing. We thought we would see rate cuts this year in 2024. And they told us we would probably see likely 3 rate cuts this year. And of course, Wall Street got excited about that. Ooh, interest rates coming down. You know, homeowners may be excited about that, or interest rates coming down. Well, now we know that that's not going to happen. It looks like we might just get one small little rate cut, maybe by December of this year. But the Fed is basically saying inflation now is going to run hot and even hotter. And the numbers pouring in are showing that inflation is getting out of control. We just got our new CPI numbers, the Consumer Price Index numbers, which really measures about 80,000 different products. And, you know, it's not good. We already know that the prices for just about everything are up about 30% for Americans across the board. And now we know that the Fed is saying, we're not going to really do anything with inflation anymore. We're going to allow it to run hot and even hotter. So as I've talked about in other videos, this is really a tale of two different economies emerging right now. Poor and middle class being really squished, put through the ringer, while the rich will get richer because companies are going to continue to make a lot of money as people spend more money on products and services. We just saw a major story over the past few days about how Americans are continuing to spend. Chipotle is doing record profits right now because they're saying millennials are just coming in buying burritos as much as they want. Even though a burrito is now like, I don't know, $15, it doesn't matter. They're just still spending it. They don't have a place to live, right? They can't afford a house. So they're just spending it on burritos. That's the state of play right now. We're spending 30, 40% more for everyday items. And gas prices set to skyrocket. If the war in the Middle East continues to unfold and the United States meddling gets out of hand, we could see record-breaking oil prices spiking to over $130, $140 a barrel. If Iran decides to block the Straits of Hormuz because the United States and Israel want to continue to agitate in the region, we could be seeing record gas prices. And that's, of course, prepping us for a really burdensome cold winter season if those numbers continue to skyrocket for natural gas and home heating oil. So the Fed is throwing their hands up, essentially. And Americans are saying, you know what, enough is enough. We can't live our lives based on what the Fed is going to do with these interest rates. So front page of the Wall Street Journal this weekend, I thought it was really fascinating. Americans and deciding whether or not to buy and sell a home. This is the hottest home selling, buying season, of the year right now. April into May is like one of the hottest times of the year for selling a home, buying a home, right? So what the Wall Street Journal is saying is that Americans are just basically, well, we don't give a rat's behind anymore about interest rates. We just need to go and buy homes. We need to sell homes. We need to put them on the market. I have to move for my job. I have to sell my home. We need to downsize. We can't just stay in this large home. Our kids are off at college now. We want to sell this home. What are we going to wait for the Fed to get their act together? We're just going to sell the home. Interest rates be damned. Same is true with increasing the size of the home. We're a small family. We've got one child. We have two more on the way. We think that's what we'd like. We need to buy a bigger house. So we'll buy it from these baby boomers who are downsizing. And that is starting to unfold right now with higher interest rates. As I've said before here on the show, higher interest rates are here to stay. So this idea of like 3% interest rates is not coming back. That is not going to happen. I don't see it ever happening again. We are going to see higher interest rates for many, many years to come. And, you know, I'm a big real estate investor, so I'm not letting it stop me from buying real estate. But of course, when you also have to take into effect food and all of the other things that go into providing for your family and all of those costs are up 30, 40%, this is soul crushing to a lot of Americans right now. And the Fed just admitting, we don't know what to do about it. We can't really figure it out. On top of this, we have a breaking news piece out of China, which I wanted to bring to your attention, which ties directly to what's happening in the United States and the concern over the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar. So Cantor Fitzgerald had a really interesting piece this week about China and the U.S. economy. And I don't think many people realize how closely linked these two things are right now. China's in trouble. And we're not getting a lot of press coverage about it. I don't know why, but there's a lot of trouble in China right now, specifically in the real estate market. Of course, this bubble has burst. And a lot of Chinese were told, you know, for many thousands of years, Chinese would buy gold and silver. Well, over the past couple of decades, China has really encouraged, the Chinese Communist Party has really encouraged the Chinese people to invest in real estate, buy real estate. So a lot of wealthy Chinese have been putting their family's resources and wealth into real estate in China. But of course, they massively overbuilt, and it was a bubble just waiting to burst. I'm sure you've seen all these ghost cities across China. So now their money was socked away in real estate. Many of them are taking that money out of real estate. And what are they doing? They're buying up as much gold and silver as they can get their hands on right now. So Chinese are basically going back to those tangible assets. This is what Chinese do. They invest in tangible assets. They invest in gold and silver and real estate. That's what they do. So they're really moving right back now into gold and silver. And Cantor Fitzgerald out with this interesting report. It's like, why are we seeing this massive demand for gold and silver right now? It's not only in the United States, but central banks and China buying up as much precious metals as they can get their hands on right now. And the mining companies can't keep up with the demand. That's why we're seeing gold prices hitting all-time highs over the past week. And price targets from UBS Bank have it hitting $4,000 an ounce. But what about silver? Silver also projected to hit major new record highs, and it's about half of its all-time high right now. Relatively speaking, you know, silver is way cheaper than gold, but in fact could be more valuable because it not only doubles, it not only a currency, but it doubles in commodities. We need them for solar panels. We need silver for all sorts of different things for electronics right now that's surging. So I'm very, very bullish on silver right now, and I just co-authored a really interesting report on silver. I want you all to download it right now. It's totally free, and I think that we're seeing a silver breakout moment, and I go through a lot of the details that I can't talk about here on YouTube, but I want to go through them in this report. Again, it's totally free on the silver breakout moment that I would love for all of you to check out. Just go to morrisinvest.com/silver, and you can download the free report and kind of dive into some of the charts and the graphs that we've put in there so you can have a better understanding of this silver breakout moment that we're seeing right now. So I think we are going to see that. That's why I'm just buying a lot of silver. I just bought a lot of silver, Natalie and I did. So let me know your thoughts on that. All right, today's our Q&A episode. We've got three questions from our audience, and I'd love to answer them here on the show. You can always leave us a voicemail question when you're over at our website, morrisinvest.com. There's a microphone icon on the right side of your screen. Just click that and leave us a 30-second voicemail. All right, first question from Vince on investing.
Hello, Clayton. My question is, on our current mortgage, we have a very low interest rate, so 2.25%. Does it make sense for us to do a HELOC?
Well, I have a lot of questions for you, Vince. I don't know why you would want to. I mean, for what purpose? I first of all, I'm not a financial advisor. I can't tell you what to do with your own money. But if I had let's say I owned a $300,000 house and it was mostly paid off, you know, I'm sitting on all of that equity, or it's paid down significantly, right? I'm sitting on all of this equity in this house right now. I always say that you cannot eat equity. So what are you doing with that equity? Can you use that equity as leverage to buy rental properties? That's what I would do. Personally, that's what I've always done. And I'd love a home equity line of credit, because then I can get equity out of my property in order to invest in other assets. But you just need to run the numbers, Vince. I mean, just talk with your local banks. My friend Dan Krause down at Churchill Mortgage, just reach out to Dan. We'll have a link in the description. Reach out to Dan. He's not an affiliate. I don't make any money off of referring you to him at all or anything like that. He's great. He's able to provide home equity lines of credit for people through Churchill Mortgage. It depends on the state you're in, though. I think that he operates in like 45 states. He can look at he can say, okay, we're going to maybe get you 5, 6%, 4%, 3%, whatever the percentage interest rate is on that home equity line of credit. To me, that's still, if you're getting an 18% return on your investment and you're paying an interest rate of about 5, 6, 7% on a HELOC, to me personally, that's still a no-brainer, because that's, you know, 18% versus 7%, right? There's still a nice profit, and I'm able to add an asset to my personal asset column, you know, that's a cash flowing asset. So you just need to really run the numbers if you're comfortable with it. But again, like I said earlier, we're not going to see interest rates come down that low ever again. So you can sit there and kind of sit on that nice 2% interest rate, but it's never coming back. So what are you going to do in the meantime? Not do anything? I think you just need to weigh the numbers, run the numbers, and see if financially it makes sense. And, you know, our team at Morris Invest can help you. Our homes, our new construction homes, we always start with a minimum internal rate of return of about 18% on our new construction rental properties for our clients. So have a conversation with our team and maybe we can help unlock some of that equity in your home. All right, our next question comes to us from Chris.
Hi, Clayton. Chris here. I have a question about an investment property that I own. I had owned it outright, all paid off, and I did a cash out refinance on it so that I could get some money and buy a new property. Come to find out, during the process of applying for a mortgage loan on that, the water company had a lien on the property because the tenant who had the water bill in their name did not pay a couple $1,000s off the water bill. So in order to get a mortgage loan, I had to pay that off myself, and then I could complete the mortgage loan. What kind of repercussions would I have in that circumstance?
Well, thanks, Chris. Very tough, right? I mean, I would definitely talk with a lawyer about it because here's the thing. It might just be the cost of doing business. It might end up being a business expense for you that you'll have to file on your taxes as a business expense because think about it. If it's a few $1,000s, what is the retainer fee for a lawyer, right? Is it going to be $5,000 to retain a lawyer and then to go after this individual and try to, you know, send them some sort of letter to ask them to make you, you know, make you pay it? You could find their address yourself, save yourself the legal fees and, you know, send them a letter and saying, due to the fact that we had to make this payment, you know, you are required. And you could send them an invoice. There are also, you know, there are also those companies that will go after debt for you. There's the debt servicing companies that will go after debt for you and they'll take a percentage of whatever money they're able to get from the person. So you might want to avoid a lawyer altogether. You could, you know, end up getting 60% of it and 30-40% will end up go to the debt servicing company. Cause there's these companies out there that will buy up these types of things, right? So you could do that if you wanted to try to recoup some of that investment or from that tenant that screwed you over. But I just think like going the legal route, you know, you got to weigh all of those things, right? Just getting lawyers involved is, oh my God, it's costly, right? So then you're going to be paying a lawyer for a retainer. Then they're going to draft it up. They're going to go after this individual. And then for what, $2,000? How much of that are you actually going to see? It's very, very difficult. You can also look into small claims court in your area. A small claims court is much less expensive, and I think it covers up to a certain threshold of money. So it might be less than $5,000 or something like that. You could just do that, and it might, in that situation, would allow you to not have to spend very much money at all with like a small claims court option. So those are some things I would check out and just weigh your cost-benefit analysis. And have you ever heard the saying, stepping over dimes to pick up pennies? The idea that you're stepping over large amounts of money just to pick up pennies, right? You're missing the bigger picture here. And so you can spend so much time focused on trying to get that $2,000 back from this guy, or you can be thinking about how to expand your rental portfolio and building your business and, you know, and expanding your empire, so to speak, instead of worrying about it really just comes down to the numbers. What makes sense to you personally and financially? I know sometimes you can feel like really burned by it. And so you could be leading with emotion, you know, and that can really be detrimental. So anyway, that's just I'm not a lawyer, not giving you legal advice, but I'm just telling you how I would approach it. It's like, well, what are the numbers? My father-in-law has been in business for many, many years. And he likes, I think his number out there in California with he's got a lot of employees. He's got two big companies. And he says, you know, he won't even think about like a lawsuit unless the number like that he lost is somewhere upwards of like over 50,000 or like 80,000 or 100,000, some number, right? He's like, it's not even worth it. Like if doesn't reach that threshold and he's lost 30,000, he doesn't even bother because the amount of money that it'll cost to go and fight the thing, it's just not worth it. And then that's time taken away from him building his business. It's just things to think about, you know? Thank you for the question though, Chris. I'm sorry that happened to you, but hopefully it sounds like you got the home equity line of credit. Are you able to do that with the refinance and move forward? Our next question comes from Oleg.
I purchased some land, Bitcoin, gold, and silver, and should I hold on to it during a deflationary or a recession or a crash? And maybe should I purchase it later after I sell it? What would you recommend?
Well, I can't tell you what to do with your investments. You know, I can't tell you, sell it now. Personally, I'm not selling any real estate or land right now. So, you know, remember these assets are, they are a hedge against inflation. So if I'm holding on and if I'm holding on to these assets, I'm going to hold on to them for many, many years. Gold and silver are also a hedge against inflation. So these assets, Bitcoin, I don't think we have enough of a track record to really know Bitcoin, but you're seeing the surging prices of Bitcoin, right? It just hit a new all-time high. And I think really a lot of the crypto people that I'm close with really believe that the only true crypto, the only one, all of them, all the other ones are literally second best, second tier is Bitcoin. That is the top of the heap. I own some Bitcoin. I'm not selling it. You know, I guess if it doubles in value, maybe I would consider it. But right now I use it and I keep it. And to me, you can borrow against it. The beauty of these assets, you know, what billionaires will do is they'll keep these assets. They'll keep their land. They'll keep their real estate. They'll keep their Bitcoin and they'll borrow against it. That's what all great business leaders do. They keep those assets, they keep their Bitcoin, and then they take out loans against those assets in order to make real estate purchases, and they pay back those loans. But the underlying asset has never been sold. They're able to just leverage all of those things. So again, I can't tell you what to do, but me personally, I'm not selling any of those things which are a hedge against inflation right now. Thank you for your great questions. Come on over to our website. Go to morrisinvest.com. Click on the microphone icon on the right side of your screen. Leave me a 30-second voicemail question, and we will attempt to answer it here on the show. Thank you guys so much for subscribing. Trying to better yourself financially. We'll see you next time, everyone.